Hillary Borman is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour, apostolic sanitarian congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is February the 9th, 2023, or it's 8 or 19, 2026. We will start our first service today. Song. Is there heaven where Yahshua is waiting? Is a place that is wondrously fair. For it glows with the light of His presence. Is a beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. There my Savior awaits, and He opens the gates to the beautiful garden of prayer. In the garden where Yahshua is waiting, and I go with my burden and care, just to learn from His lips words of comfort in the beautiful garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. Oh, the beautiful garden of prayer. There my Savior awaits, and He opens the gates to the beautiful garden of prayer. There's a garden where Yahshua is waiting, and He bids you to come meet Him there. Just to bow and receive all His blessings in the beautiful garden of prayer. For the beautiful garden, the garden of prayer. For the beautiful garden of prayer. And my Savior awaits, and He opens the gates to the beautiful garden of prayer. Our sermon, which is called Abraham and Canaan, this is Patriarchs and Prophets, chapter 12 by Ellen G. White. Start now with Abraham returned unto Canaan. Very rich in the cattle, in silver and in gold. Lot was still with him, and again they came unto Bethel, and pitched their tents by the altar which they had before erected. They soon found that increased possessions brought the increased trouble in the midst of the hardships and trials. They had dwelt together in harmony, but in their prosperity there was danger of strife between them. The pasturage was not sufficient for the flocks and herds of both, and the frequent disputes among the herdsmen were brought for settlement to their masters. It was evident that they must separate, for the Abraham was Lot's senior in years, and his superior in the relation, in the wealth, and in the position. Yet he was the first to propose plans for the preserving peace, although the whole land had been given him by the Yahweh himself, he courteously waived this right. Let there be no strife, he said, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. Hear the noble, unselfish spirit of the Abraham was displayed. How many, with the similar circumstances, would at all hazards, would at all hazards cling unto their individual rights and preferences? How many households have thus been rent asunder? How many churches have been divided, making the cause of the truth a byword and a reproach among the wicked? That there be no strife between me and thee, as said to Abraham, for we be brethren, not only by the natural relationship, but as worshippers of the true Yahweh. For the children of Yahweh, the world over, are one family, and the same spirit of the love and conciliation should govern them. Be kindly affectionate one to another with a brotherly love, and honor preferring one another. Is the teaching of our Savior. For the cultivation of a uniform courtesy, a willingness to do unto others as we have them to do unto us, would annihilate half the ills of the life. For the spirit of the self-aggrandizement is the spirit of Satan. That the heart in which the love of Yahshua is cherished will possess that charity which seeketh not her own. The charity which seeketh not her own, such will heed the divine injunction. Such will heed the divine injunction. Look not every man on his own thing, but every man also on the things of others. Although Lot owed his prosperity for his connection with the Abraham, he manifested no gratitude to his benefactor. Courtesy would have dictated that he yield the choice unto Abraham. But instead of this, he selfishly endeavored to grasp all disadvantages. He lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of the Jericho, that it is well watered everywhere, even as the garden of the Yahweh, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. For the most fertile region in all Palestine was the Jordan Valley, reminding the beholders of the lost paradise, and equaling the beauty and productiveness of the Nile-enriched plains they had so lately left. There were cities also wealthy and beautiful, inviting for the profitable traffic in their crowded marts, dazzled with the visions of their worldly gain. Lot overlooked the moral and spiritual evils that would be encountered there, for the inhabitants of the plain were sinners before the Yahshua exceedingly. But of this he was ignorant, or knowing gave it but little weight, for he chose him all the plain of Jordan, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. How little did he foresee the terrible results of that selfish choice. After the separation from Lot, Abraham again received from the Yahshua a promise of the whole country. Soon after this, he removed unto Hebron, pitching his tent under the oaks of Mamre, and erecting beside it an altar unto the Yahshua. Well, this is a son now we're talking about. That Abraham was very much acquainted with, because his son made himself known unto all the prophets here on earth that he was he's the king of this world, Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, and the free heir of those upland plains with their olive groves and vineyards, the fields of the waving grain, and the wide pasture grounds of the encircling hills, he dwelt, well content with his simple, patriarchal life, and leaving to Lot the perilous luxury of the Vale of Sodom. Abraham was honored by the surrounding nation as a mighty prince and a wise and able chief. He did not shut away his influence from his neighbors. His life and territory in the marked contrast under those of the worshippers of the idols. There are the idols coming here. Exerted a telling influence in the favor of the true faith, for his allegiance unto Yahweh was unswerving, while his affability and benevolence inspired confidence and friendship, and his unaffected greatness commanded respect and honor. For his religion was not held as a precious treasure to be jealously guarded and enjoyed solely by the possession. True religion cannot be thus held, for such a spirit is contrary unto the principle of the gospel. Well, we'll call it that, under the principles of the teachings of the sanctuary service and all of its fullness. While the Yahshua is dwelling in the heart, it is impossible for the concealing of the light of his presence, or for that light to grow down. On the contrary, it will grow brighter and brighter as day by day amidst the selfishness and sin that envelops the soul are dispelled by the bright beams of the Son of Righteousness. For the people of Yahweh are his representatives upon the earth. For the people of the Yahweh are his representatives upon the earth. And he intends that they shall be lights in the moral darkness of this world. Spread all over the country and the towns, cities, and villages, they are Yahweh's witnesses for the channel through which he will communicate unto an unbelieving world the knowledge of his will and the wonders of his grace. It is his plan that all who are the partakers of the great salvation shall be missionaries for him, for the piety of the Christian constitutes the standard by which Rollins judged the gospel. Charles patiently born blessings, gratefully received meekness, kindness, mercy, and love habitually exhibited are the lights that shine forth in their character before the world, revealing the contrast with the darkness that comes of the selfishness of the natural heart. Rich in the faith, noble in the generosity, unfaltering in the obedience, and humble in the simplicity of his pilgrim life, Abraham was also wise in the diplomacy and brave and skillful in the war that he had with those five kings. Notwithstanding, he was known as the teacher of a new religion. Three royal brothers, rulers of the Amorite plains in which he dwelt, manifested their friendship by inviting him to enter into an allegiance with them for the greater security, for the country was filled with violence and oppression. An occasion soon arose for him to avail himself of this alliance. Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, had invaded Canaan 14 years before and made it tributary unto him. Several of the princes now revolted, and the Elamite king, with four allies, again marched into the country to reduce them to submission. Five kings of the Canaan joined their forces and met the invaders in the Vale of Siddim, but only to be completely overthrown, for a large part of the army was cut to pieces, and those who escaped fled for safety to the mountains. For the victors plundered the cities of the plain and departed with the rich spoil, and many captives, among whom were Lot and his family. For the Abraham dwelling in the peace in the oak groves of Mamre, learned from one of the fugitives the story of the battle and the calamity that had befallen his nephew. He had cherished the unkind memory of the Lot in gratitude. All his affection for him was awakened, and he determined that he should be rescued. For the seeking first of all the divine counsel, Abraham prepared for war. From his own encampment, he summoned 308 trained servants, men trained in the fear of the Lord and the service, of their master and in their practice of the arm. He confederates Mamre, Eshcol, and Aner join him with their hands, and together they started in the pursuit of the invaders. For the Elamites and their allies had encamped at Dan on the northern border of Canaan. Flushed with the victory and having no fear of an assault from the vanquished foes, they had given themselves up to reveling. The patriarch divided his force so as to approach from a different direction and camp on the encampment by the night. His attack, so vigorous and unexpected, resulted in a speedy victory, for the king of Elam was slain, and his panic stricken forces were utterly routed. Lot and his family, with all the prisoners and their goods, were recovered, and a rich booty fell into the hand of the victors. And to Abraham, under Yahweh, with the Yahweh, the triumph was due, for the worshippers of the Yahweh had not only rendered a great service for the country, but had proved himself a man of valor. It was seen that righteousness is not cowardice, and that Abraham's religion made him courageous in the maintaining of the right and defending the oppressed. His heroic act gave him a widespread influence among the surrounding tribes. On his return, the king of Sodom came out with his retinue for the honoring of the conqueror. He bade him take the goods, begging only that the prisoners should be restored. By the usage of war, the spoils belong unto the conqueror. But Abraham had undertaken this expedition with no purpose of the gain, and he refused to take advantage of the unfortunate, only stipulating that his confederate should receive the portion under which they were entitled. Few, if subjected to such a test, would have shown themselves as noble as did Abraham. Few would have resisted the temptation to secure so rich a booty. His example is a rebuke for the selfish-seeking mercenary spirit. But Abraham regarded the change of the justice and humanity. His conduct illustrates the inspired maxim that thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I have lifted up mine hand, he said, unto the Asher, the Most High Yahweh, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread, even unto a shoe lashing, that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich. He would give them no occasion to think that he had engaged in a warfare for the sake of gain, or to attribute his prosperity to their gifts or favor. Yahweh had promised to bless Abraham, and unto him the glory should be ascribed. Another who came out to welcome the victorious patriarch was Melchizedek, king of Salem, who brought forth bread and wine for the refreshment of his army. As a priest of the Most High Yahweh, he pronounced a blessing upon the Abraham and gave thanks unto Yahweh, who had wrought so great a deliverance by his servant, and Abraham give him tithes of all. Abraham gladly returned unto his tents and his, but his mind was disturbed by the harassing thought. He had been a man of the peace so far as possible, shunning enmity and strife, and with horror he recalled the scenes of the carnage he had witnessed. But the nation whose forces he had defeated would doubtless renew the invasion of Canaan and make him the special object of their vengeance, becoming thus involved in the national quarrel. The peaceful quiet of his life would be broken. Furthermore, he had not entered upon the possession of Canaan, nor would he now hope for an heir unto whom the promise might be fulfilled. In a vision of the night, the divine voice was again heard. "Fear not, Abraham," were the words of the prince of the princes. "That's be Yashir, that he's the prince of the princes. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." But his mind was so oppressed by the forebodings that he could not now grasp the promise with the unquestioning confidence as heretofore. He prayed for some tangible evidence that it would be fulfilled. And how was the covenant promise to be realized while the gift of a son was withheld? "What wilt thou give me," he said, "seeing I go childless, and no one born in my house is mine heir?" For he proposed for the making of his trusted servant Eliezer his son, by the adoption and the inheritor of his possession, that he was assured that a child of his own was to be his heir. Then he was led outside his tent and told to look up unto the unnumbered stars glittering in the heavens. And as he did, so the words were spoken: "So shall thy seed be, Abraham, believe Yahweh, and it was counted unto him for righteousness." But still, the patriarch begged for some visible token as a confirmation of his faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant. I added the blood part, and as an evidence unto after the generations that Yahweh's gracious purpose toward them would be accomplished, for the Asherah condescended for the entering into a covenant with his servant, employing such fortune or forms as were customary among men for the ratification of a solemn engagement, by the divine direction, Abraham sacrificed a heifer, a she-goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, dividing the bodies and laying the pieces a little distance apart. Unto these he added a turtle dove and a young pigeon, which, however, were not divided. This being done, he reverently passed between the parts of the sacrifice, making a solemn vow to Yahshua of the perpetual obedience. Watchful and steadfast, he remained beside the carcasses till the going down of the sun, for the guarding them from being defiled or devoured by the birds of prey. About sunset, he sank into a deep sleep, and lo, a horror of the great darkness fell upon him. And the voice of Yahweh was heard, bidding him not to expect the immediate possession of the promised land, pointing forward unto the suffering of his posterity before their establishment in Canaan, for the plan of the redemption was here open unto him in the death of the Yahshua as the great sacrifice, and his coming in glory. Abraham saw also the earth restored unto the Eden beauty. This is what our commission is. It is to fulfill what Abraham was shown, to restore not only Israel, but the United States and the whole world. To be given him for an everlasting possession as the final and complete fulfillment of the promise. And we are heirs according to that promise. We're the seed of Abraham. If you belong unto the Yahshua, then are you the seed of Abraham and heirs according to promise. As a pledge of this covenant of Yahweh with men, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp, symbols of the divine presence, passed between the severed victim, totally consuming them. And again a voice was heard by the Abraham confirming the gift of the land of the Canaan for his descendants from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. But Abraham had been nearly 25 years in Canaan. Yahshua appeared unto him and said, I am the Almighty Yahweh. Walk before me and be thou perfect. And all the patriarchs fell upon his face, and the message continued, Behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. In the token of the fulfillment of this covenant, his name hitherto called Abram was changed unto Abraham, that signifies father of a great multitude. Sarah's name became Sarah, princess, for said the divine voice, she shall be a mother of men of nations, kings of the people shall be of her. At this time the rite of the circumcision was given unto Abraham as a seal of the righteousness of the fruit which he had yet been uncircumcised. It was to be observed by the patriarch and his descendants as a token that they were devoted unto the service of Yahweh and thus set free from the idolaters. And that Yahweh accepted them as his peculiar treasure. By this rite they were pledged to fulfill on their part the conditions of the covenant made with Abraham. They were not to contract marriages with the heathen, for by so doing they would lose their reverence for Yahweh and his holy law. They would be tempted to engage in the sinful practices of the other nations and would be seduced into the idolatry. For the Yahweh conferred great honor upon Abraham. Angels of heaven walked and talked with him as a friend with friends. When judgments were about to be visited upon Sodom, the fact was not hidden from him, and he became an intercessor with Yahweh for the sinners. His interview with the angels presents also a beautiful example of his hospitality. In that hot summer noontide, the patriarch was sitting in his tent door, looking out over the quiet landscape, when he saw in the distance three travelers approaching. Before reaching his tent, the strangers halted as if consulting as to their course. Without waiting for them to solicit favor, Abraham rose quickly, and as they were apparently turning in another direction, he hastened after them and with the utmost courtesy urged them to honor him by turning for the refreshments that he had. With his own hands he brought water that they might wash the dust of the travel from their feet. He himself selected their food, and while they were at rest under their cooling shade, an entertainment was made ready, and he stood respectfully beside them while they partook of his hospitality. For this act of the courtesy Yahweh regarded as a sufficient importance for the recording in his word, and 1,000 years later it was referred to by an inspired apostle. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Abraham has seen in his guest only three tarred wayfarers, little thinking that among them was one whom he might worship without sin. But the true character of the heavenly messengers was now revealed. Though they were on their way as ministers of wrath, yet unto Abraham, the man of faith and the everlasting covenant, they spoke first of the blessing. Though Yahweh is strict for the marking iniquity and for the punishing transgression, he takes no delight in the vengeance, for the work of the destruction is a strange work unto him who is infinite in love. For the secret of the Asherah is with them that fear him. Abraham had honored Yahweh, and the Yahweh honored him, taking him into his counsel and revealing unto him his purpose. Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Said the Asherah. For the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according unto the cry of it which has come unto me. And if not, I will know. For the Yahweh knew well the measure of the Sodom's guilt, that he expressed himself after the manner of man, that the justice of his dealings might be understood before bringing a judgment upon the transgressor. He would go himself for the instituting of an examination of their course. If they had not passed the limits of the divine mercy, he would still grant them space for repentance. Two of the heavenly messengers departed, leaving Abraham alone with him whom he now knew to be the son of the Yahweh. And the man of the faith pleaded for the inhabitants of Sodom. Once he had saved them by his sword, now he endeavored to save them by prayer. Lot and his household were still dwellers there, and the unselfish love that prompted Abraham for their rescue from the Elamites now sought to save them, if it were Yahweh's will, from the storm of the divine judgment. With the deep reverence and humility, he urged his plea. I have taken upon me to speak unto the Yahshua, which am but dust and ashes. There was no self-confidence, no boasting of his own righteousness. He did not claim favor on the ground of his obedience or of the sacrifices he had made in doing the Yahweh's will. Himself a sinner, he pleaded in the sinner's behalf. Abraham was not a sinner. That was just added by Ellen G. White from her own thinking. That wasn't inspired thinking. Abraham was, he was a righteous man. He maybe sometime in his life might have been a sinner. But Yahweh found him at the age of 75, a righteous man in Ur of the Chaldees. That's the reason he called him to be his representative of the people on the earth. Such a spirit, all who approach Yahshua should possess. Yet Abraham manifested the confidence of a child pleading with a loved father. He came close unto the heavenly messenger and fervently urged his petition. Though Lot had become a dweller in Sodom, he did not partake in the iniquity of its inhabitants. Abraham thought that in that populous city there must be other worshippers of the true Yahweh. And in the view of this, he pleaded, that be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked. So here, Abraham was talking about Lot, a righteous man living down there in Sodom. But shall not the judge of all the earth, and Abraham was saying unto Yahshua, you're the judge of all the earth. Do right. Abraham asked not once merely, but many times, waxing bolder as his request was granted. He continued until he gained the assurance that if even 10 righteous persons could be found in it, the city would be spared. Love for the perishing souls inspired Abraham's prayer. While he loathed the sins of that corrupt city, he desired that the sinners might be saved. His deep interest for Sodom shows the anxiety that we should feel for the impenitent. We should cherish hatred of sin, but pity and love for the sinner all around us are souls going down to ruin as hopeless, as terrible as that which befell Sodom. Every day, the probation of some is closing. Every hour, some are passing beyond the reach of mercy. And where are the voices of warning and entreaty to bid the sinner flee from this fearful doom? Where are the hands stretched out for the drawing him back from the dead? Where are those who with humility and persevering faith are pleading with Yahweh for him? For the spirit of Abraham or the spirit of Yahshua? For the son of Yahweh is in himself a great intercessor in the sinner's behalf. Okay, let's read that again. For the spirit of Abraham was the spirit of the Yahshua. For the son of the Yahshua is himself a great intercessor in the sinner's behalf. He who has paid the price for its redemption knows the worth of the human soul. With an antagonism to enter such as can exist only in a nature spotlessly pure, Yahshua manifested toward the sinner a love that the infinite goodness alone could conceive. In the agonies of the crucifixion, and the agonies of the crucifixion, himself burdened with the awful weight of the sins of the whole world, he prayed for his revilers and murderers, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Of Abraham it is written that he was called a friend of Yahweh, the father of all them that believe. The testimony of the Yahweh concerning this faithful patriarch is Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my law. And again, I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Yahshua, to do justice and judgment, that the Yahshua may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. It was a high honor under which Abraham was called, that of being the father of the people who for the centuries were the guardians and the preservers of the truth of Yahweh for the world. And that people through all the nations of the earth should be blessed in the advent of the promised Messiah, that he who called the patriarchs judged him worthy. It is Yahshua that speaks. He who understands the thoughts afar off and places the right estimate upon man said, "I know him." There would be on the part of Abraham no betraying of the truth for the selfish purposes. He would keep the law and deal justly and righteously. And he would not only fear the Yahshua himself, but would cultivate religion in his home. He would instruct his family in the righteousness. The law of Yahweh would be the rule in his household. Abraham's household comprised more than 1,000 souls. Those who were led by his teaching for the worshiping of the true, of the one Yahweh, found a home in his enchantment, and here, as in a cloud, he received such instruction as would prepare them to be representatives of the true faith. Thus, a great responsibility rested upon him, for he was training heads of the families, and his methods of government would be carried out in the household over which they should preside. In the early time, the father was the ruler and priest of his own family, and exercised authority over his children, even after they had families of their own. For his descendants were taught to look up unto him as their head in both religious and secular. This patriarchal system of the government Abraham endeavored to perpetuate, as it tended to preserve the knowledge of the Yahweh. It was necessary to bind the members of the household together in order to build up a barrier against the idolatry that had become so widespread and so deep-seated. Abraham sought by every means in his power to guard the inmates of his enchantment against mingling with the heathen and witnessing their idolatrous practices. For he knew that familiarity with evil would insensibly corrupt the principle. The greatest care was exercised to shut out every form of false religion, every form of false religion, to shut it out, and to impress the mind with the majesty of the glory of the living Yahweh as the true object of worship. It was a wise arrangement which Yahweh himself had made to cut off his people so far as possible from the connection with the heathen, making them a people dwelling alone and not reckoned among the nations. He had separated Abraham from his idolatrous kindred, that the patriarch might train and educate his family apart from the seductive influences which would have surrounded them in the Mesopotamia, and that the true faith might be preserved in its purity by his descendants from generation unto generation. Abraham's affection for his children and his household led him to guard their religious faith, to impart unto them a knowledge of the divine statutes as the most precious legacy he could transmit unto them and through them to the world. All were taught that they were under the rule of the Yahweh of heaven. There was to be no oppression on the part of the parents, and no disobedience on the part of children. Yahweh's law had appointed unto each his duties, and only in the obedience unto it could they secure happiness or prosperity. For his own example, the solid influence of his daily life was a constant lesson for the unswerving integrity, the benevolence, and unselfish courtesy which had won the admiration of the kings were displayed in the home. There was a fragrance about the life, a nobility and loveliness of the character, which revealed unto all that he was connected with the heaven. He did not neglect the soul of the humble servant. In his household there was not one law for the master and another for the servant, a royal way for the rich and another for the poor. All were treated with the justice and compassion as inheritors with him of the grace of love. He will command his household. There would be no sinful neglect to retain the evil propensities of his children. No weak, unwise, indulgent favoritism. No yielding of his conviction of the duty for the claims of the mistaken affection. Abraham would not only give right instruction, but he would maintain the authority of the just and righteous law. How few there are in our day who follow this example. On the part of too many parents, there is a blind and selfish sentimentalism. Miscalled love, which is manifested in leaving children with their unformed judgment and undisciplined passion for the control of their own will. This is various cruelty unto the youth and a great wrong unto the world. Parental indulgence causes disorder in the families and in society. It confirms in the young the desire for the fallen inclination instead of submitting unto the divine requirement. Hence they grow up with a heart adverse to dealing with the Yahweh's will, and they transmit their religious insubordinate spirit unto their children and children's children. Like Abraham, parents should command their household after them. Let the obedience for the parental authority be taught and enforced as the first step in the obedience unto the authority of Yahweh. For the light esteem in which the law of Yahweh is held, even by the religious leaders, has been productive of the great evil. For the teaching, which has become so widespread that the divine statutes are no longer binding upon men, is the same as idolatry and the effect upon the morals of the people. Those who seek to lessen the claims of Yahweh's holy law are striking directly at the foundation of the government of the families and nations. Religious parents failing to walk in his statutes do not command their household to keep the way of the Yahweh. For the law of the Yahweh is not made the rule of life. For the children, as they make homes of their own, feel under no obligation for the teaching of their children what they themselves have never been taught. And this is why there are so many godless families. This is why depravity is so deep and widespread. Not until the parents themselves walk in the law of the Yahshua with the perfect hearts will they be prepared to command their children after them. For a reformation in this respect is needed. A reformation which shall be deep and broad. Parents need to reform ministers. Need to reform. They need Yahweh in their household. If they would see a different state of things, they must bring His word into their families and must make it their counselor. They must teach their children that it is the voice of Yahweh addressed unto them, and is to be implicitly obeyed. They should patiently instruct their children, kindly and untimely, teach them how to live in order for the pleasing of the Yahweh. For the children of such a household are prepared for the meeting of the sophistries of the infidelity. They have accepted the Bible as the basis of their faith, and they have a foundation that cannot be swept away by the incoming tidal of skepticism. And too many households, prayer is neglected. Parents feel that they have no time for the morning and evening worship. They cannot spare a few moments to be spent in the thanksgiving unto Yahweh for His abundant riches, mercies, blessed sunshine and showers of rain, cause the vegetation to flourish, and for the guardianship of the holy angel. They have no time to offer prayer for the divine help and guidance, and for the abiding presence of Yahshua in the household. They go forth to labor as the ox or the horse goes without the one thought of Yahweh or heaven. They have souls so precious that rather than permit them to be hopelessly lost, the Son of Yahweh gave His life to ransom them. But they have little more appreciation of His great goodness than have the beasts that perish. Like the patriarchs of old, those who profess to love Yahweh should erect an altar unto the Yahweh wherever they pitch their tent. If ever there was a time when every house should be a house of prayer, it is now. Fathers and mothers should often lift up their hearts unto Yahweh in a humble appreciation for themselves and their children. Let the father, as priest of the household, lay upon the altar of Yahweh the morning and evening sacrifice. Here's that morning and evening sacrifice. There it is right there. Morning and evening. While the wife and the children unite in prayer and praise, in such a household, Yahshua will love to tear it. From every believer's home, a holy light should shine forth. Love should be revealed in action. It should flow out in all home intercourse, showing itself in the thoughtful kindness and gentle, and the gentle, unselfish courtesy. There are homes where this principle is carried out, homes where Yahweh is worshipped, and truest love reigns. And those homes, morning and evening prayers ascend unto Yahweh as sweet incense, and His mercies and blessings descend upon the suppliants like the morning dew. A well-ordered believer's household is a powerful argument in the favor of the reality of the believer's religion, a believer in the everlasting covenant, an argument that the infidel cannot gainsay. All can see that there is an influence at work in the family that affects the children, and that the Yahweh of Abraham is with them. If the homes of the professed believers had a religious mold, they would exert a mighty influence for the good. They would indeed be the light of the world, for the light of heaven speaks for every faithful parent, and the words addressed unto Abraham. Okay, let's go back and read that last paragraph all over again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. For a well-ordered believer's household is a powerful argument in the favor of the reality of the believer's religion. argument that the infidel cannot gainsay. All can see that there is an influence at work in the family that affects the children, and that the Yahweh of Abraham is with them. If the houses of the professed believers have a right, I'm talking about professed believers in the everlasting covenant of Yahweh, had a right religious mode, they would exert a mighty influence for the good. They would indeed be the light of the world. For the Yahweh of the heavens speaks unto every faithful parent in the words addressed unto Abraham. I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and he shall keep the way of the Yahshua to do justice and judgment, and that the Yahshua may bring upon the Abraham that which he has spoken of him. This brings in verse 36. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio. Or we're going to close now with a song.